This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, Ti Xiao Yik. Tomorrow actually is World Rare Disease Day, and we will be highlighting today one of the more visible rare diseases, albinism. So now, despite not being as life-threatening as some of the other rare diseases, albinism does come with its own set of complications, especially related to the vision. So we'd like to shed light on this condition and the associated vision complications. Complications today. You can call us if you have any questions or if you would like to share your experiences, perhaps if you live with albinism or if you have a family member or friend. You can call us at 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. In the studio this afternoon, we have Dato' Dr. Rokia Omar, optometrist and director and low vision specialist at the University Community Transformation Centre of University Kebangsaan Malaysia. Good afternoon, Dr. Rokia. How are you?
Good afternoon. Fine, thank you.
And of course, also Maizan Muhammad Saleh, a person living with albinism. Maizan is the founder and was a former president of the Kuala Lumpur and Selangor Albinism Association. Welcome to the show, Maizan.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So, you know, there's been a lot of talk actually about rare diseases, I think, in the days leading up to this, and rightly so, because these are diseases that don't get much airtime. And albinism, I think, is something that perhaps some of us have sort of heard a little bit about, but we don't fully understand it. There are lots of misconceptions surrounding it. Maizan, actually, perhaps you would be the right person to help us understand what exactly is albinism.
Okay, albinism refers to actually a group of inherited conditions, and we basically do not make up the usual amount of a pigment called melanin. It's either we don't have it at all or we lack some. We lack this pigment, which in turn affects the hair, skin and eyes. So basically it is required. In layman terms, the more you have it, well, that's how, you know, you appear a little more darker in terms of tone. And it is actually required in the eyes so that it makes it more developed properly in terms of the retina and in terms of the nerves from the eyes to the brain. So from all that, basically it really affects the vision, which is we are not blind. We're not legally blind, but we are visually impaired.
Okay, all right. So in terms of the physical characteristics or the features associated with albinism, visual impairment being one of them, what are the other typical characteristics?
Okay, the common ones would be we appear very fair, milk creamy type of skin. Other features would include, if you look at us, we have like wobbly eyes, meaning our eyes are move at a very rapid pace, involuntarily and unconsciously. I guess that's the more obvious ones.
Okay, and we will get into sort of the impact of this kind of
vision.
The impact of it on your vision. But are there different types of albinism?
There's various types, because the common ones would be like the hair, skin, and eyes would be obvious. We are very fair, but those are called oculocutaneous albinism. And there's another type of albinism which is known to us in Malaysia, which is ocular albinism, which only affects the eyes. So basically, the person's hair and skin would just be like any other normal person in Malaysia, being a Chinese and Malay or Indian, but perhaps a lighter tone. There's also one other type of albinism, which is actually quite rare. We've come to know there is one within our NGO group. They have more, the skin is more prone to bruising and bleeding. So that's more of a severe type. I think it would be referring to Hermansky Podolak syndrome.
Right, yeah. I see. Okay, yeah. And that Hermansky-Podolak being one of the several other medical conditions yeah. that lead to albinism.
Yes.
Dato Rokia, why is there a difference? Like, why do you have albinism, you know, which only presents with the eyes, and why do you have some that present with, you know, hair and skin as well?
Well, it's very much depending on what you call it. The for albinism, it's because of the genetic factors. Yeah, mm-hmm. the problem with that. So when it comes to the vision part, the ocular type, it's because of the reduction of the number of melanin there is just localized to that particular area. Whereas for the normal type, it goes all over the body.
Right.
So it become, you know, undeveloped, or either it doesn't have, or it's not enough.
Mm. Yeah. Can you explain a bit more? I know Maizan mentioned it, but what exactly is the role of the melanin in vision?
Well, at the back of the eye, we have the retina, and they have like 10 layers. Mm. Right, and melanin is one of the things that is in the retina. And what happens is that if it's not enough, so when the light comes in, it was not properly, you know, processed and everything. And what happens is that the development of the retina is not complete, and what we call hypoplasia. And because of that, when the lights enter the eye, get to the retina, the transmission of the thing is, the light transmission is not enough, and therefore the vision is not, the area of the retina is not properly developed, and because of that, the vision is reduced. Mm. And that's why you start to see the dancing eye, or what we call nystagmus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So why the eye basically move around is basically because the eye is trying to find the best position where it can give the best vision.
Right, so it's compensating.
Yes, it's a mechanism of the eye, mm-hmm. the vision, I mean the brain and the eye, to actually, because it works together so that it can actually see better. And that's why you notice with people with albinism, sometimes when they look at people, they actually tilt their head a little bit,
mm.
you know, at a certain angle, because at that particular position, the eye move very little,
mm-hmm.
and you get enough information so that the kin can be transmitted to the brain and they have a better vision.
Right, right. Okay. So in terms of, you know, what you actually see, how does your vision, Maizan, compare with, say, mine?
Okay. Okay. I do wear glasses, but just for everyone's information, although we do wear glasses, it doesn't really help improve vision clearly,
mm-hmm.
because we also have to use other gadgets to help us see. So basically, if you ask me, I get that question a lot. How do you see me? So basically, if I see you, Xiaoyik, I can see you wearing glasses. But if you do have like other scars or pimples on your face, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be able to see it clearly. So basically, everyone's right. face to me is very clear.
Right.
Yeah. So even some distance objects like writings, if it's too small, then it's just a blurry line, mm-hmm. just like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's actually very much depend on the level of your vision.
Yeah.
If you have, for example, the Snellen chart, when we read. Yeah, in the optometry clinic.
Right, the test that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are familiar with the A or the T. Yeah,
yes.
The big letter is equivalent to 6 over 60. What it means, basically, normal people, good sighted vision, they will be able to see at 6 meter mm-hmm. clearly.
Mm-hmm.
But people with disability, regardless what type of disability, but in this particular show, talk is about albinism, so they only see at 6 meter.
Right. Okay.
So that's how the comparison is.
Okay.
So it depends how bad it is, your vision. It can be 6 over 18, which is the minimum to be registered as low vision patient.
Mm, okay. Yeah. All right.
Usually with that chart, I can only read the biggest one, and the first line. That's
all right.
It. Yeah.
And I mean, with among people with albinism, you do have varying degrees of yes. vision problems
yes.
then?
Yes.
Right.
It can range from very mild to moderate. And to severe,
mm.
but very rare where I met people with like blind category, because it's such really really severe case, unless they have other diseases accompanied with that, like maybe glaucoma or something like that. But that's
right.
something else.
Right.
But if you just talk about albinism, it can range from mild, moderate up to severe case.
Would you get the would somebody with albinism also have the other kinds of, do you call them refractive problems, like myopia and all
yes,
that?
Yes, they do have. People with albinism, they can have myopia, that means short-sightedness, mm-hmm. which they need negative lenses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can also have hyperopia, mm-hmm. or they can have astigmatism. Mm. And if they reach 40 and above, they will require reading glasses, mm. which is what we call presbyopia. So the eye function as any other right. people. It's just that their main issue with albinism is that their vision is blur.
Yeah,
they are very photophobic because of the lack of the pigment.
Mm-hmm.
Because when it's lack of pigment, the iris also have less pigment. That's why it appeared to be like bluish.
Mm.
For us, dark skin, you know, we have yes. darker color mm-hmm. iris. So that mm-hmm. actually protect and reduce the number amount of light that comes mm. into the eye.
Okay. So, yeah. And photophobic, what actually is the impact of that? Does it damage the eyes in the long term?
Well, when it's photophobic, obviously when you try to look far, it's very glary mm-hmm. and it's going to impact in terms of, you know, you can't see clearly. It is very, in terms of glare, there are two types. One is a disability glare and discomfort glare. Mm-hmm. For us, we experience discomfort glare. That means we go out, wear sunglasses, that's it.
Yeah.
But for albinism, people with albinism, they will have uncomfortable feeling mm-hmm. and they will end up with tearing mm-hmm. if it's too much sun. They can't really open their eyes.
Right.
So it yeah. can actually impact in the sense that they have limitation if you ask them to work outdoors or having outdoors activities.
Mm.
So it does impact in their daily activities.
Right, right. And you did mention as well that there's a genetic component to albinism. Mm-hmm. How is it inherited?
Okay. The father and the mother must have this, the gene.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get married, it will express on the child. If the mother doesn't have, they can be appear to be normal. Mm-hmm. But if they have the gene inside that, and the father also happened to be that, that's why you see the father, mother normal, suddenly the...
But they are the child, carriers.
Yeah, the carriers. So mm-hmm. end up, you know, having child with albinism.
Mm, all right. Okay. There's a lot to unpack here. We've actually covered quite a lot about sort of how the complications of albinism manifest. But when we come back after the break, I really want to find out more about the vision difficulties. And I'm sure Maizan has an interesting story to share about the challenges that you've had sort of coming to terms with the vision complications. We're talking about albinism today in conjunction with World Rare Disease Day, which falls tomorrow, actually. In the studio are Datuk Dr. Rokia Omar, an optometrist, and Maizan Mohamad Saleh, who has albinism. We'll be right back after this break on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to the show with me, T. Xiaoyik. On the Health and Living Show today, we're talking about albinism in conjunction with World Rare Disease Day, which falls tomorrow. In the studio with me are Dato' Dr. Rokia Omar, an optometrist, also Director and Low Vision Specialist of the University Community Transformation Centre with University Kebangsaan Malaysia, as well as Maizan Mohamad Saleh, who has albinism. She's the founder and former president of the Kuala Lumpur and Selangor Albinism Association. Before the break, we talked about how albinism affects the eyes, that you have low vision. What you see is blurry, in other words. And, you know, I've in my reading, it also came up that people with albinism have an undeveloped fovea. So, you know, Dr. Rokia, if you could explain a little bit about what the fovea is and what's the role in our vision.
Actually, in albinism, it's not only just fovea. The whole retina is underdeveloped. Mm, mm. And in retina, we have what we call macular area, yeah, where actually we have photoreceptors there, rod and cones, yeah. Mm. And in retina, we have photoreceptors. We actually will work when you have light coming.
Mm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So for albinism, the function of fovea is the most sensitive part of the eye.
Mm-hmm.
That actually react because they have so many cones there, and when the lights come in, it will activate and will transmit impulse to the brain information, right. So that at the end of the day, you can actually see things. Now, when it's underdeveloped, all these things will be affected. Yeah, and at the end of the day, the vision that is formed is blur.
Right. Yeah. Okay. In addition, people with albinism may also have misrouting of the visual pathways connecting the eye to the part of the brain that's responsible for vision, as I understand it. So is that misrouting, does that explain the kinds of symptoms that you experience?
Well, the normal way is that, you know, you have your eye, the lights comes in, it goes to the through the lens, mm-hmm. it goes through the retina. Yes. And the retina, it specifically goes through the fovea, yes. or the macular area and the fovea. From the fovea, it will go to the optic nerve.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it will go to the chiasma, where the junction is, and it goes all the way to visual cortex.
All right.
So for the albinism, as far as what we understand, is that the transmission of the impulse, it's all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
It's the problem with the melanin that is lacking, and because of that, the retina is underdeveloped, and because of that, there'll be a hypoplasia where the information is not able to be passed through, and because there's no problem with the nerve, the nerve is okay.
Right.
Yeah. So the problem is actually because of the underdeveloped of the retina, which cause, so the thing that happened there is not able to be transmitted properly.
Yeah. Maizen, what does all this mean for somebody who's living with albinism? Perhaps you can share first a little bit about your diagnosis of albinism. What were the challenges in, you know, identifying what the condition was? And after that, we'll go a little bit into what kind of vision challenges you had.
Okay. When I was born, my parents, they knew about albinism because my dad had a friend when he was in high school. So when I came out white, they weren't so surprised. But I must say that my parents don't actually understand the condition well, because when I was small, that was when I was, I think, before primary school, my mom will bring me to the beach. So obviously, we're more prone to skin cancer. But on that note too, maybe later on I'll be explaining just a little more. When I was in high school, I mean, although I know all these things that I'm not supposed to be under the sun, I'm supposed to be wearing more sun protection screens. I didn't do that. It was like I just let through, I mean, I've went through life just like any other person. I did what I wanted to do. I did still go out in the sun. I was in the school band in secondary school for 5 years, so that it was all marching and not just concert band. But for everyone's information, I mean, diagnosis of an albinism is through the eyes. That's what I've been made to understand. So from there, I guess, if you ask me, it would be, I had a tough time when I was young because I wasn't born in the digital age right now where you have gadgets to help. So, it is difficult and I didn't have any role model because unlike some families who have two or three siblings who are also albinos. So, I guess when you have to go through a certain condition to everybody else, when you do have vision problems or when you're blind or you have any physical disabilities, it just stops there. But for me, it's like there's so many layers to not able to see. You're able to understand your condition, able to actually look at other things on how to go around doing things and adapt to the condition. So as you've been living, so I've been living with albinism for almost, 43 this year. It's all right. I mean, there's nothing that we cannot do as long as we...
Of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the process of getting to that point where you know what you have to do to adapt, get the right interventions to manage it. In the process of that, what were the challenges that you faced, where your vision problems might have sort of, I don't want to say a barrier, okay, but would have presented challenges, you know, in terms of your studies, your work and all that.
Okay. Okay. I only knew about my vision problem was when I was in standard three, primary three, mm-hmm, where I was supposed to help my neighbor to actually pack books. So, but her timetable was actually was at a distance, so I couldn't read, and I didn't know it was kind of a problem. I thought it was quite normal to have blurry vision.
Right.
So when I was small, my parents took me to the normal optometrist where they don't even understand about the condition that I went through, mm-hmm, because it requires rehabilitation, meaning you require like lenses, special lenses to actually help you see. So I've used like normal glasses for many, many years. And even because when I was small, we were living in US, even when we went to the normal optometrist there, they couldn't understand why I couldn't read the chart.
Mm.
So it was actually very difficult, but one experience led to the other, where my mom did ask around, and we came to this UKM low vision center, where at the point of time we've learned that there's gadgets. Mm. So I guess you learn along the way, as people didn't understand, even the teachers in school, they didn't understand. So I didn't even like studying because I couldn't read the textbooks.
Right, of course.
I couldn't even read what was written on the blackboard. Mm. So, but because God takes away your vision, I mean, I must say that He does give back something else. For example, memory power. So I've used a lot of hearing. I had to just listen, mm, because when you, because there were just blackboards. So even placed in front, I still had to go up to the front and go and see what was written.
Mm.
So that was pretty bad. And when you're in primary school, people tease you and, you know, why are you standing up so often? So that wasn't really helpful.
Mm. Dr. Rukia, Maizan mentioned that the diagnosis of albinism is usually through your vision assessment.
Well, actually, I have to correct that a little bit.
Thank you.
Yeah. Diagnosis of albinism, like I said, very much depend on the types.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they'll do, like, for example, if you're a full-blown albinos, then you look at the skin, the hair, mm-hmm, the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, ocular albinism, then, like Maizan said earlier, the skin,
mm-hmm,
the hair appear to be normal.
Yes.
Or it could be a little bit lighter, a bit more fairer. But when we look at the back of the eye, it will show all the sign and of the reduced, like, you know, hypoplasia, the, you know, it's undeveloped, mm-hmm, you know, things like that. And mm-hmm, it appear to be much paler, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the way how we actually diagnose them.
Yeah. Okay.
To differentiate between it's a full albinism or ocular albinism.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, is it enough to go to a normal optometrist if you're starting to recognize some of these signs?
Okay. Maybe back then, Maizan was referring to, you know, she's, you know, like about 30, 40 years ago.
Yes,
I think nowadays, with the current technology and the training that we're given, optometrists will be able to identify albinism with no problem.
Mm.
And they will normally have, we'll explain to them what are the things that they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, all these devices like the magnifiers, you know, telescope and things like that is available on the market.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, should be, not be a problem at all.
Is there any way to actually correct, in terms of the physiology of the eye, is there any way to correct it?
When you say correct, meaning what are you implying? Like go back to normal or?
Yes.
Yeah. No. Mm. Unfortunately, no. You can't correct it normal. But what we're doing is basically enhancing the vision.
Yeah.
Right. For example, Maizan said even though she wear glasses, it will not be able to improve because of the underdevelop of the retina and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we give them glasses to maximize the vision.
All right.
But on top of that, we need to enhance it using magnifiers, telescope and things like that. So that's how we actually do it. And then we, with the gadget now, with the closed circuit TV, the portable magnifiers, we have all those things to actually enhance reading and distant viewing.
Yeah. What do you mean by closed circuit TVs?
Closed circuit TV in optometry or in in this area. Basically, it's a television unit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a monitor with a magnification capacity, which you can actually enlarge the material that you're reading.
Oh.
So that's called closed circuit TV.
Right.
Not the CCTV for the...
No, yeah, that's what I thought.
No, no.
That's our understanding.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. So this particular one is meant basically for reading purposes.
Right, right.
It enhances it and it's enlarged the thing. And it can go up to about 60 times magnification.
And this is, I imagine it would be a fairly portable...
We have different types. We have portable one, but when it's portable, the magnification will not go as high as 60 times. But if it's a stand type, mm-hmm. then it can go up to 60 times magnification.
Okay. And Maison, you mentioned special lenses.
Yes.
So are those one of the devices that you've already...
Yeah.
So I think my question then would be, are these devices, these assistive technologies, are they easily available for people with albinism?
Currently, I think it's much, much better than
before.
Mm-hmm. Like when I first came back from Australia in 1996, it's quite difficult to get. But nowadays, almost every selected optometrist
mm-hmm.
who's practicing and hospitals, they have the starter kit to actually share with the people who have the difficulties so they can try it out.
Right.
So it's quite easily available now.
Okay. Yeah. I imagine they are not cheap either. Are there benefits that people with albinism can you qualify for the OKU status and, you know, get the benefits under that?
Yes, we can actually apply for OKU status based on vision.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually apply to the welfare department for such gadgets. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we can.
Your vision must be worse than 6 over 18.
Mm-hmm.
Then in both eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're entitled to register as low vision patient.
Okay. Low vision, is that the same as legally blind?
We prefer not to use legally blind.
Right.
You know,
okay.
This thing. We use the term that we use nowadays is low vision,
right,
or blind.
Mm-hmm.
So low vision, the definition for Malaysia is from 6 over 18, worse mm-hmm. than 6/18, up to 3 over 60,
mm-hmm.
or 6 over 120. That is low vision.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That means people who are normal can see 120 meters.
Yes.
But low vision, severe cases, we only see at 6 meters.
6 meters. Mm.
And then vision worse than 6 over 120, up to no light perception, that will be blind.
Mm.
So we don't call them legally blind now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think very quickly as well, you have mentioned it, of course, the exposure of sun can be an issue for people with albinism. Exactly how does it affect you?
Okay, I do remember when I was smaller, when I was younger, we do get sunburned when the skin is exposed.
Mm-hmm.
So and the skin will peel off.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't get that now. I'm not sure whether it's the skin is more mature, which I'm not sure. So I'll be like, I think I was more pinkish cream when I was younger,
mm-hmm.
but now I think I'm more creamier milk, yeah, but
right.
That's on the skin. But when you do go out under the sun, like Prof. Datuk did say, we do tear up,
mm-hmm.
but it depends on how your level of endurance is. If you know, there's I've read somewhere if you're gonna be afraid of everything else outside, then you wouldn't be able to do anything else.
I see, yeah. Of course. So you actually just learn to adapt.
Yeah, learn to adapt.
Normally, you will see albinism people, when they go out, they will start to squint their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
That also help to reduce the amount of light that comes to the eye.
Yep.
And then we always encourage them to wear sunglasses,
mm-hmm.
To wear hats, wear long sleeves, you know.
Yeah.
That would help them, you know, when they go and do outdoor activities. And of course, what we call it, the sun protection. You know?
Yes.
Sunscreen is very important.
Yeah, because there is the increased risk of skin cancer.
Yes.
Does the vision problem actually get worse over time?
Normally, the vision is stable
mm-hmm.
because this is not a progressive type of condition, not like, you know, other diseases.
Mm.
The thing is that it's stable And then it will increase a little bit, you know, as they get older in terms of, you know, like the power. For example, you are short-sighted, a power of -2. After a few years, you know, it can go about 2.5, something like that. But and then when they get to about 40 years old, everybody goes through that process, aging process, become presbyopic, or you need reading glasses, you know.
Yes.
That's a normal process, you know. All people, all eyes will go through the aging process.
Right, right. But does having albinism complicate these normal vision problems that come with aging?
I don't think so. Okay. It's just
cataracts and all that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, cataract is also a risk for everybody.
Yes.
Especially when you spend more time outdoors. Mm-hmm. So you can have that. Now, because of the pupil, the iris, is less pigment, so the light that actually can also transmit through that. So they are a little bit more
higher risk of
cataract. But I have not seen any studies that showing that people with albinism will have higher cataract. You know what I've seen before is that if you spend more time outdoors and you're not wearing eye protection, you have higher risk of getting cataract.
Okay, perhaps it would be a good point now to sort of give some advice. You know, what would be some red flags that perhaps for parents, especially perhaps that your child has albinism, especially the type that is not so apparent with the skin and the hair. So in terms of their vision, what would be the red flags that we should look out for?
When you have a baby, the first thing, you know, when you have a new baby, there are three things I think that you have to look at. One, you have to make sure that the eye appear to be straight. Okay, that's very important. This is just a normal screening thing that we normally teach parents. They make sure that the eye is straight, and then the eye can follow when you move objects in front of their eyes, of course with the colourful objects. And the pupil is black.
Right, okay? Of course.
And besides that, you also want to make sure that the eye is not moving or dancing. I mean, that's why it should be straight.
Straight, you know, yes.
And move together. Those are the things that we look at. If the baby starts to show didn't do all those things, then it's time to go and see a pediatrician, you know, to have a look and check. And then in under the pediatrician, they have what we call ophthalmology, who specialize in pediatrics. So they will look at that baby's eye and they can do all the comprehensive checking.
Yeah. Okay. And in terms of perhaps if it has been missed in infants, as children grow up, in terms of the kind of visual difficulties that they have, what would be some of the things?
As they get older, when they start to go to kindy at the age of 4, we have certain tests that we can actually use. In fact, when it's younger, we can. It's more of a, like provincial looking test. I mean, the which object they prefer to see, that sort of test. But if they go at the age of 4, we can actually use certain pictorial test picture that they can actually see, and then it will give us an indication what level it is. Now if from there we see, we can identify whether they have reduced vision or not, and from there we can actually advise to see whether they need glasses or it's actually because of the ocular albinism. So there's a few steps that you can actually do. So best to actually go and see your optometrist and your ophthalmologist to actually double check.
And they should have highly sensitive assessments to pick that up. Maizan, what assistance do you think that people with albinism in Malaysia need?
It depends on the stage. Like for example, I think if where the students, when they're studying, I think assistance would be in terms of the teachers themselves helping by not using too much of the blackboard or whiteboard, meaning using more of speech.
Right.
That's one. And perhaps in terms of exams, they like for myself, we I did have extra time for both objectives and subjective papers. That's one. And perhaps I guess a lot of the things would it would greatly help if a lot of the printouts or what written notices and all are in bigger fonts. That's one. And if there could be assistance in terms of getting to the right classrooms, but those would come handy if we have good friends. Yeah.
So, well, yeah, support from you know, everyone around you. I'm sure that makes a big difference.
Yes, and also I do get some of the members saying that, you know, when I also went through it, because sometimes when I do copy my friends and the teachers would think that I'm copying answers.
Mm.
Yeah, but actually, because we are not able to see what's on the board.
Of course.
Yeah, that's one. I guess those are in terms of studying, but in terms of work, I'm just trying to seek everyone's understanding, mm-hmm. that, you know, it doesn't stop to just not being able to see, because there's more to not being able to see, because you would be able to, you know, we would be able to adapt, mm-hmm. and at the end of the day, it's results matters. It's mm-hmm. not the disability that you do see.
Mm, yeah. Yes. If people with albinism want to look for more information and for support, where can they go or who can they contact?
Okay. We do have an FB page.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of closed because I'm actually quite overprotective over my members.
Right.
I think anybody can actually send a message. There's also Albinism Malaysia's FB too, but that's open. And normally people would get in touch with me. Parents would get in touch with me.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite easy to actually Google us.
Yeah.
And that's for basic information. But we do look into NOAA. That's the US and US-based website where that's the information normally we get from there. But when people talk about the eyes and all, I would normally get them to see Datuk Rokia. I know there's many optometrists out there, but from our experiences, I think because they don't see albinos on an, you know, everyday basis, mm-hmm. so I mm-hmm. would normally get them to see Datuk.
Or, the expert. Yeah
the expert. So because I want it to build an expertise there, all the cases are there, so it's very, so that the parents, when they go, you know, they don't have to explain, oh, okay, we have albinos coming here, so because mm-hmm. sometimes having to explain and not being able to understand, it's
yes, yeah. Absolutely.
If I just may add a little bit, sure. I think with most of the government hospitals, they have low vision services,
mm-hmm.
Which actually open for everybody. They just have to, you know, get a referral and go to the hospital.
Okay.
They can also do the assessment. In fact, I do know majority of the main hospital and district hospital do provide once a week kind of services.
District hospitals,
yeah,
as, well.
Hospital mm-hmm. as well.
Okay.
So they do have different level of what we call facilities,
mm-hmm.
like secondary care. Like for us at UKM, we have a tertiary level. But
yes.
In the Ministry of Health for the General Hospital, they have tertiary level of care also.
Okay.
So it is available. So you can go there first because it's the best is to go to where they are.
Yeah.
But if you're still not very happy with whatever the service is being provided, then you can always come to UKM, Low Vision Clinic, not a problem.
Sure. And your final message for World Rare Disorder Day, especially focusing on albinism, Dr. Rocket?
Albinism is just a condition, yeah. People whoever having it, and for us who actually working and, you know, staying with them or
mm-hmm.
living with them,
mm-hmm.
should not neglect them. You know, we just should accept them as they are.
Mm-hmm.
They have so much potential, providing that we give them the right tools, the right intervention, and also rehabilitation, and mm-hmm. they can be successful. So not a problem at all.
A case in point, Maizan.
Yes, of course.
Your message, Maizan?
Okay. To everyone out there, whether albinos or non-albinos, I would just would like to put across that we're just like anyone of you. We do have vision problems, but which we have overcome. We have been very successful with my members have been have met families, successful families. They've become lecturers, they've, you know, members even drive. I know Datuk wouldn't agree to this because it's quite against the vision. But at times we do drive because we need to get around.
The reality.
The reality is Datuk.
But now we have ride hailing services and all.
Yeah, we've got Grabs. Yes, I'm a frequent Grab user. So I think at the end of the day, what condition we do live in, it's always a matter of building trust in our abilities and understanding, because you know, all our hearts are red, so we're just the same. So I mean, although we're not spooky, because we do get name callings like ghost and all. So at the end of the day, we should embrace differences.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you very much for joining me today, Dato' Dr. Rokia Omar, optometrist and also director and low vision specialist with University Kebangsaan Malaysia, and Maiza Muhammad Saleh, who has albinism. And of course, today we were talking about albinism in conjunction with World Rare Disease Day, which falls tomorrow. You've been listening to Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.